Okay, good morning. So for those who have not yet met me, my name is Emma Dribali, and I'm the project assistant in the CSO's office, and I'm in charge of coordinating the board's advisory panel. So thank you to all of you for being here and participating in our very exciting meeting. So during this general session, our executive director, Dr. Joe Selby, is going to come up and give a little presentation about conflicts of interest and why they're so important to us. And then him and Dr. Arnold Epstein, who is a member of our Board of Governors, are going to answer a few questions that some of you have submitted prior to the meeting. We decided to do this Q&A session after reading some of the post-event survey results from our January meeting, and a lot of you suggested that that would be a great idea and that you would really want to have a board member present to be able to answer your questions. So please welcome Dr. Joe Selby.
Thank you, Emma. And good morning, everyone. Since you are part of the Bacori family, and we really feel like you are, and we actually look forward very much from meeting to meeting to seeing you again and to bringing you into all the deliberations that we go through and helping us figure out how we best get to a high priority, really meaningful research agenda. Since you are our family, I'm going to share a little family news of my own. Last night about midnight, my wife and I learned that we had just become grandparents for the first time. So we have a baby granddaughter who has not quite been named yet, born at home in where, of all places, California. So we've been going back and forth with him for about this and that, and hard to hide the medical anxieties that go with having a... We did a halfway decent job, I would say. So I know you all have, once again, your work cut out for you in each of the advisory panels, and we thank you for that. I wanted to just fill you in on two things that have just evolved a little bit since the last time I talked to you. The first is that notion of the pragmatic clinical studies. That last time, those of you who prioritized topics, instead of deciding which ones would go to the targeted PFAs, you decided that, but you also decided which ones of them were high priority enough that we ought to put them on a list. And we had at the end 15 topics that we put on a list. And we also invited people to respond with applications that were related to the IOM Top 100 or the ARC Future Research Needs or other critically burning topics. And I'm telling you, we have been very excited at Bacori. We put the posting out just after the last advisory panel meeting and got 271, I think, letters of intent. And reviewed them, had a committee of staff plus board members and methodology committee members reviewed them and invited 39 to submit full applications. And these are really on some of the hottest topics that you as advisory panels have recommended. And we will be announcing them at the board meeting next week. So as of next week, the topics that actually will be invited will be announced publicly. They will be due in August, reviewed in November, funded just after the first of the year. And then after this, 6 to 9 will be funded each 6 months. So within 24 months, we'll have 25 to 35 of these very large $10 million plus studies, probably many of them, if not almost all of them, randomized studies, but very large studies on very cutting-edge, high-priority topics that you have helped us prioritize. So thank you for that. The other thing I want to say is the engagement rubric, which the Patient Engagement Advisory Panel has worked so hard with us on, is really just, I would say, taking on a life of its own. It's everywhere we go, we get questions about what do you mean by engagement and how do you do engagements. And the GAO is now beginning a a first substantive review of PCORI, which they will deliver to Congress in March of 2015. And they are very interested in how we do engagement and what engagement means. So to have this engagement rubric, to have it up on the website, to be able to put it in the application instructions, to be able to show it to merit reviewers, is just a really great next step in telling the world how to do engagement, and that's something we will be studying very carefully. And now I wanted to say, before asking Arnie to come up, I believe that we have one new panelist. So one person rotated off the assessing prevention, diagnosis, and treatment options advisory panel, and I have not met her yet, but I believe Linda McNamara is in the house. Is that right? Hello. Welcome. And Linda, if you don't mind just telling us just a bit about yourself. I think we have one other new member, but I don't believe they're here yet. If by chance you are, let us know. Okay, good. So I'll ask Dr. Arnie Epstein from the Harvard School of Public Health, but now, as of about 2 months ago, I guess we could say on loan from Harvard to the Office of the Assistant Secretary for Planning and Evaluation. He is a general internist, and he is a health services research expert, an international expert, and particularly in areas such as healthcare coverage and the effects of coverage, and is going to be here at ASPE for the next 2 years. We'll get to see a little more of you, like, for instance, this morning. Arnie, would you come up here? And we're going to, what we're going to do is together answer questions that you put to us in at the January meeting. Try our best, and yes, there's other staff members among us who want to help answer these questions, help Arnie and I out, you're welcome to just raise your hand and chime in. Oh, and we've got slides. Oh, that's right. And, you know, I just heard that. Okay. Thanks. I'm already screwed up. My mind is elsewhere this morning.
That's good.
That's right. Arnie, would you like to say anything as a board member?
Just as a board member, I'm happy to join Joe this morning. This is an extraordinary experiment, PCORI, designed to really change the care that patients get across the country. And I've been delighted to participate in it and couldn't be happier with Joe and the staff who have done such a good job putting it together. This is really an opportunity to talk about some of the issues that we didn't quite get the story out as clearly as we could, and we can hopefully clarify that.
Okay, well, right off the bat, here's some questions that came in January. Is there a way for PCORI to track the racial and gender diversity of principal investigators on PCORI contracts? And the answer is we have not done it yet, but I know that we are strongly considering it, or is it already a done deal that we are going to change it? That was one thing I wasn't sure of. I know that we've been considering it strongly. Do you know, Emma, do you know if it's, or Kara, do you know if it's if we've baked it into the application process going forward? Okay, so we haven't yet, but that's the plan. It's an excellent question, and it's actually a very good idea because we are concerned to learn about whether our research funding is going to hopefully a broader community. Yes, Regina. I think that's the second part of the answer to this, that in addition to who the PIs are, we are very interested in characterizing through our engagement program who the team members are. So we say that our research should be composed of teams, and so we want information not just on the PI, but on the team leads too. Yes? Yes, there is, and I don't know the answer to the question of whether we have cracked them in the past. Does anybody? My hunch is we probably haven't, but I think, again, we certainly could. Yes?
No, I know you talk about knowing the makeup of the team, but I thought you were actually going to talk about the makeup of the population that was actually studied. So if you did something on asthma, what is the population? Because it might be different in different population of patients.
Yeah, we do have very good data on that. I think our review process, and we always show it every quarter, we show, and a large percentage of our research involves study populations of vulnerable study populations. So I think we do have because we have a disparities agenda, because we have a systems agenda and a communications agenda, I think that we wind up with a very large fraction. I remember, I think, yes. Thank you. Good. Okay, and are there plans for preparing to implement training for traditional research reviewers? And the answer is very definitely yes, and that's one of the places the rubric comes in. So the rubric is a collection of engagement practices. It was provided as a resource this time to the applicants, and it will be used in merit review training for this next round to make the analysis of engagement much more concrete. So we started off saying engagement was important and not being able to say much else, and we're gradually concretizing it over time. And Arnie gets his turn in just a minute here. Are there plans to train community and consumer groups on how to evaluate science? And the answer is yes. In fact, we implemented a methodology 101 course for the patient and stakeholder reviewers. And the goal of this training is to begin to provide some basic training in methods for all the non-scientists, just to make the discussions at the merit reviews, I mean, nobody has said they aren't robust discussions, but to make them even more balanced and to bring increasingly the entire panel into each discussion. This is our first pass, and we will continue developing that. So the next question is one for Arnie, and that is, I think, is this right, Arnie?
I don't know if that is what it is.
Yes, I think that is. It says?
Answer him until you see him.
Okay. Well, I can see him. That's my problem. I've got two versions here. Okay, good.
You're ahead of me. So right from the beginning, the quarry has been about two efforts. One is to marry the idea that investigator-initiated research has a lot of merit, 1,000 points of light, and the other is that by concentrating our efforts in certain key and important areas, by directing certain areas, we could also make good progress. And I think we're going to continue both of those trains going on in the future. The most exciting part, I think, for me as a board member, is the New Pragmatic Trials Initiative, in which we're going to have elements of both. That individuals will identify the actual areas that they think are most suitable to study out of a large group that we've pulled together through advisory panels and other means to identify. And the amount of money and resources that can go to these studies will be much larger. Can be, as Joe said, a $10 or even $15 million, can go up to 5 years. And I think that's the way that the board and the staff want to signal that it's okay to be ambitious. If you think you really can do something that's going to change how doctors and patients make decisions, we're willing to spend that money and go for those resources. There'll be other new efforts, some of which have appeared and will be stronger at dissemination, information synthesis, supporting conferences which can speed tools and speed our findings out into the open. But it'll be much a continuation and a big expansion of what we've done thus far.
So then there's a follow-up question.
To what extent will the continuing implementation of the ACA if you read the ACA, we're a part of the ACA, very different than the mandate for insurance, very different from all you've been hearing about premiums and enrollment. We're part of a series of efforts the government's making to try and build the infrastructure that will give patients better care, different than just insurance. So we fit in closely with the money that the government has put together for electronic health records, tools to bring information to the point of care, and we are the organization that's designed to improve the information that can go in those electronic health records and decision support. And we fit along with that, along with incentives for public reporting and pay for performance, to try and drive the system towards wiser decision making. And PCORI is going to play that central role. It's in the ACA, and we stick very closely to what the ACA tells us we have to do, both in who serves on the board and what are the areas that we focus our attention on.
Did you want to say anything in this first question about share with us the long-range strategic views? Did you mention, again, I'm sort of going back and forth between granddaughter and here. Did you mention evidence synthesis? Did you mention anything? Did you say anything about evidence synthesis?
I did, but it's okay.
Good. Moving right along, folks. Whatever will PCORI understand?
Can you imagine if you had twins?
Can I give you advice or ask a question? He's a family doctor.
My question relates to the point. How does the PCORI strategic plan really intersect with that of other federal agencies, and does PCORI have the support of other federal agencies? I know some are on the board and so on, in terms of that plan.
You want to take a second?
I'll say a couple things, and then Joe, please go through. We think of ourselves as adding, but especially complementing them. One of the challenges, as Francis Collins talked about again and again, is getting, as his own budget gets plateaued and then contracts, is how does he do trials and how does he get new clinical information more efficiently than ever before? And we've got an issue, as you know, with CoreNet, a really big initiative to try and do that. And obviously, we are rethinking the way research gets done, bringing the patient and the doctor to the center in ways that neither ARC nor NIH has done in the past. And we're making a big bet that that will lead us to getting closer to where the real questions need to be asked and the information that is so needed by doctors and patients, other providers and stakeholders, and that the way of doing work will yield large benefits, not done by the others.
Now, I'll just add a bit that one of the federal agencies that we are kind of joined at the hip with almost, particularly in other people's minds, if I go out and give a talk to say, how do you distinguish from ARC? If ARC goes out and gets a talk, to say, what do you do and what is ARC and what is PCORI do? So we meet regularly with Rich Cronick, and our mission actually is to articulate what each of us does, make sure we do it, and make sure that as we do it, we complement each other. One of the areas that we have a lot of reason to meet about is this whole area of dissemination and implementation. Assigned to ARC in the legislation, but we're the ones held responsible for making sure that practices change. So, we've got to work integrally there. We've got to decide whether there's enough resources dedicated to dissemination or whether it may well need more, whether there's work PCORI is going to have to do independently because ARC simply can't, or whether there's work that ARC would do with some additional funding from PCORI. So that's the question. CDC is nicely connected with us, and in fact, just is on the steering committee of PCORNet and has just asked if they could place an EIS officer on the coordinating center of PCORNet, just to make sure that PCORNet builds in ways that support CDC activities. And then I overlooked the FDA. So the FDA is extraordinarily interested in PCORNet and supportive, and we're really talking about ways that we can complement each other in terms of data and involvement with systems. So I'll go back to the top list here. So I'm glad that PCORNet has come up. Aside from the pragmatic clinical studies, PCORNet is our other huge initiative right now. and we've invested just over $100 million in this, 11 clinical data systems, clinical data networks, and 18 patient-powered networks across the country. What are we going to do to ensure that PCORnet grantees systematically collect and make available patient-reported outcomes from within the client health records? Great question. Well, first of all, it was a requirement in the applications. Secondly, we have a task force. So PCORnet is a series of task forces, and each one oversees a part of the vision of what PCORnet will be. We have a separate task force on patient-reported data, including patient-reported outcomes. We're also working closely on another task force with healthcare systems to make sure that they understand the potential of PCORnet and to work with them to talk about things like collecting more patient-reported data. My view is you cannot tell a healthcare system to collect patient-reported outcomes so that you can do research on them. That's just not going to happen, and it shouldn't happen. Our view is that we work to show that collection of patient-reported outcomes has clinical utility, and then health systems are much more willing to put it into their electronic health records. It's costly. It's disruptive to put new information in an electronic health record. So you've got to know that it has value. We work closely with clinicians in these systems. We also have a funding announcement out now to advance the work of PROMISE, which is a very highly standardized set of patient-reported measures, which will continue expanding and start initiated, still supported by NIH, and we're augmenting that funding, thinking that it will come back to benefit us in PCORnet. How is PCORnet ensuring that children's patient-reported outcomes are included in the PCORnet initiative and in large contract work? Good question. A lot of interest in children in PCORnet, both because we have one CDRN, which is a network of 17 children's hospitals and delivery systems, and also because a large number of the PPRNs, including nine that have represent patients with rare diseases, are primarily based in pediatric populations. So there's a lot of support, interest, and advocacy for children's research in the PCORnet. The other thing is PPRNs themselves, they're really where a lot of patient-reported outcomes are will be developed and will be implemented. So I think that you can see, particularly in the children's PPRNs, you'll see a lot of development and implementation of patient-reported outcomes. What incentives will PCORnet create to ensure PCORnet can be useful for examining the effectiveness of system-level interventions in addition to patient recruitment for individual level? Well, one of the words that gets mentioned a lot in PCORnet is sustainability. We can't pump the amount of resources we pump into this kickoff phase every 18 months. You know, it's just not possible. And we want this network to be so good that it sustains itself, and we want one of the sustainers to be the systems. So we had a two-day meeting at the IOM last week with leaders of the healthcare delivery systems in which these CDRNs are based, talking directly about sustainability, directly about making PCORnet a research network that, among other things, answers system-level questions. We talked about cluster randomized trials. We talked about measurements of performance and studying that across the network. So I think we're very bent on having the systems involved and in doing the kind of research that answers system-level questions. And did we get the system? Okay. And the same thing. We've not really talked directly about this much yet. We have a task force on health system involvement, and I think there we will come to the point of collecting data systematically on system-level characteristics like provider characteristics, clinic characteristics. So let's see where we are here. Okay, that is yours.
As PCORI moves forward, how will the balance of the portfolio of funded research be allocated between large single-source contracts versus smaller investigative-driven? That's what I've alluded to this. I think we're going to keep both in our portfolio, but there's interest in the board side in really catalyzing ambitious projects and putting out the word that we're willing to consider, you know, if the bang for the buck is there, we're willing to consider much larger projects, $10 million, $15 million, potentially could even go larger, is my guess, and it's very special circumstance, and 5 years in length and on. So the real issue here is get people focused and put enough consensus out there so people are really willing to spend the time and effort to address those most important problems and do it in the best way.
How is CORE working to facilitate the dissemination of findings from the funded CER? The patient engagement rubric is highly valuable. Would the CORE consider making available a dissemination and implementation rubric? Well, the answer is, as I already said, we're very focused. 2014 really is the year in which we are focusing intensely on getting an answer to this question ourselves. In the fall of 2013, we released an RFP and eventually signed a contract with an organization called Mathematica to work with us in the first 9 months of 2014 to develop the CORE's dissemination and implementation plan. It's a multifaceted plan. I mean, it's not fully developed yet, but I can predict it will be multifaceted. One of the critical ways we believe that we emphasize dissemination is by emphasizing engagement. So if we engage those end users of the research at the beginning, we make sure the questions are more relevant. We hopefully make sure that the research gets conducted well, that it's interpreted appropriately. And if the findings merit it, then you've got people already involved with CORE and the researchers who feel compelled to help disseminate it. So that's one little part of the plan. But other parts are partnerships with both patient groups and physician organizations, specialty groups, quality organizations dedicated to quality and safety, to have those ongoing relationships. Another part of it is relationships with journals so that you can get the information published in scientific and other venues. All of that will be worked out in the dissemination plan. A lot of it will, but not probably all of it, will involve ARC. We'll see how much we're able to do with ARC. I think that's it. Would we consider making available a dissemination implementation rubric? That seems like a very good idea. Another idea that's been batted around, I do not want to say that it's going to happen, but you probably asked me if I didn't say it, so I'll say that, you know, another possibility might be a type of award as research is, CER research is winding down, a type of reward that applicants could compete for to disseminate findings from earlier CORE funded studies. So I think we've reached the end of the questions.
Any more?
Would you like to do this in the conflict of interest work? Or but I just got a granddaughter. Okay. Thank you, sir.
There you go.
Have a good day.
Okay. Thanks, Darnie. Go back to work.
Thank you all.
Thanks, Emma. Okay, so this is a very brief talk about conflict of interest, and I think I've been pressed into doing this because I think maybe we don't have all of our disclosure agreements signed yet, and I want to just tell you how important it is. We have every year, every single member of the board, the methodology committee, and the staff signs a disclosure agreement. It's in the legislation. It's absolutely critical that we share with the public who we are, where we're coming from, who we're connected to, not so that we can be eliminated from all work, but so that people understand where we're coming from. And as somebody said, as many people said, you wouldn't have a good committee if you didn't have a lot of conflicts on it, because you want people that are really connected to the real world and to the delivery of healthcare. On the other hand, you need to explain that to people just so that they understand who's making the decisions. Actually, I think you take the whole bouquet of the quote-unquote conflicts or associations you've got, and it's reassuring to people that you've got folks coming from a wide variety of perspectives. What should you disclose? So certainly financial relationships, and those are those defined in the document, or personal relationships. So personal relationships like a spouse or a first degree relative, that's a son or daughter or a parent, you should disclose them. Where you work is oftentimes relevant. income above a certain amount from stocks, honoraria, consulting fees, leadership positions in other healthcare organizations. And this, as I said, this relates to you and your first degree relatives. So the next step here is that in each of the advisory panels today, you have a few minutes on your agenda set aside to filling out the conflict of interest form. So please, actually, if you have any questions, you can ask them now, and we'll get answers from the authorities. But otherwise, guidelines will be provided for filling it out, formatting it, and staff will be able to end it. I'm sorry, staff will be able to in the advisory panel meetings. So, any questions? Yes, sir.
You know, I think one question that always comes to mind in conflict of interest is the stock. The majority of people that work with universities have a retirement account that invest in stock. I don't know what the stocks are.
I think that happens to just about everybody, and that's not a problem. You're not expected to try to tease apart your mutual fund. Regina?
Yes. I'm often asked, does my membership on an advisory panel, and this is from researchers, if my membership on an advisory panel precludes me from participating in conversations or activities in planning a research design for a PFA?
Well, if you want to be considered as an applicant for that research, the answer is very clearly yes. I actually don't know if we have this completely fleshed out. We tend to keep all of you on there. Mary.
I'm Mary Hennessy, PCORI's General Counsel. So if you're talking to... So you are going to get some information from me. So, you know, when you're serving on a PCORI advisory panel here, your work is in the public, right? You don't have access to inside information. Your participation is considered input, which, as you know, PCORI seeks input from a wide variety of audiences. You don't, in the context of just serving in a public capacity on these advisory panels, you don't have what we call involvement or inside access. And so if your participation is limited to that level, then you do not have inside information, you are only giving input, and you would be eligible to apply for funding. But if you have to be very attentive, because if, for example, you are asked whether you want to serve on, every once in a while, maybe there'll be a working group that is focusing on a specific issue, and it's not a public meeting, or it's not going to result in information being made public. Those situations might be different, but just serving publicly is okay.
Right. So, yeah, what I was going to say is you're really on the other side of the firewall in terms of knowing anything about a particular funding announcement that's going to come out. For example, that's why I did not show you the actual list today of the letters of intent. That will go out next week when it goes out to the public. Okay. Any other questions, Emma? So, thank you.
So thank you for answering those very important questions. Ah, sorry.
On. This is for Joe and the gentleman from Harvard. Was referring to hear that you were aligned with the mutual use work. And I was wondering, is Corey Buckley around in
that? Is. Thanks. is Corey allowed to comment on the request for comments from the HIT Policy Committee? Call on meaningful use standards? That's a question for Mary.
I don't think
I don't know any prescription against any citizen can comment on them, so I don't know any reason that we couldn't. I will say, just for the general information, that another member of the CORNET's steering committee is the ONC. So we consider the work on the ONC to be really foundational for establishing the PCORnet. ONC, by the way, is the group that's really promoted the widespread use of the, not only the widespread use of an electronic health record, but the standardization of the data that goes into it.